This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Last night, it was all about the GOP presidential primary, with the seven candidates who didn't make the cut for the official debate participating in a separate forum, followed by the top 10 polling candidates taking the stage for the main event, including current frontrunner Donald Trump. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to analyze how the candidates performed last night and look at the latest in other political news. Howard Wilkinson won't be joining us today. Howard's under the weather, and Howard, Ken, and I hope you feel better very soon. And you can join our conversation today, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ken, good afternoon.
Hi, Mark. I hate the fact that Howard is not going to be able to make it today. So much to talk about. That debate yesterday was just everything it was built up to be.
Yeah, you know, this has just got to be killing Howard to not be able to be part of this. You know how Howard is about politics.
I know. Maybe I don't know if Donald Trump had him deported or something. I don't know what it was, but I wish he were here too. Yeah, absolutely. We all hope he feels better.
Yes, we do. Again, you can join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You know what, Ken? The one thing that really annoyed me from last night's debate was that game show bell that sounded when time was up, because my dogs thought it was the doorbell. So every time it went off, they started barking.
That's so funny. I saw that a lot of people on Facebook were writing that is my dog the only one reacting to the bell? That's so funny.
I was wondering if other dog owners had the same experience, so that answers my question. And speaking of questions, Ken, what's the trivia question for today?
Well, you know, we saw two debates last night. We saw the kids' table debate at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, where seven candidates showed up, and we had 10 candidates from the 9 to 11 hour, 2 hours. And, of course, that's 17 candidates. Obviously, not all 17 will still be around by the time we get to Iowa and New Hampshire. So the trivia question is basically, 4 years ago, who was the first major candidate, Republican candidate, to drop out of the race?
Okay, wow. That could be any number of people, but okay. And if you think you know the answer to that, give us a call, 513-419-7100. If you think you know the answer, the first correct answer is going to win a political junkie button, 513-419-7100. Again, the question is, who was the first major Republican candidate to drop out of the race 4 years ago? So, Ken, what was your overall impression of that first debate? They were calling that the happy hour debate, I think.
Yeah, you know something. I kind of felt badly for them. If you saw the screenshot, the wide shots of the audience, there were very, very few people there. It was kind of like, and whenever the moderators, Martha McCallum and Bill Hemmer, would ask a question, you heard the echo in the hall. But it was interesting. I mean, for the most part, you could see why they didn't make the top 10, but there was some very instructive comments from Lindsey Graham, from Carly Fiorina, from Rick Perry. So, you know, most people didn't watch it. I wish everybody did watch it, but, you know, I don't know how you get 17 candidates on one stage, and I understand Fox's dilemma there. But
It was tough enough with 10 last night.
It was, and of course, I still don't like the arbitrary. I mean, it wasn't so arbitrary, but did Rick Perry, was there a big difference in the polling between Rick Perry and John Kasich? I don't think so. And I kind of think that in the first debate, the American people should see them all up together. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Carly Fiorina or Lindsey Graham, for example, battling Rand Paul on foreign policy and government surveillance. So, you know, I would have liked to have seen them all together, but I understand why it didn't happen.
You know, you were talking about feeling sorry for them. There was one candidate in particular I felt really sorry for, and that was former Virginia Governor Jim Gilmore. Because, you know,
who?
He's Jim Gilmore, is that correct?
Who? Being number seven? No, I'm kidding. I'm teasing.
Oh, yeah. You are kidding me. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, basically, nobody.
That's
knows
good because I thought maybe I slipped up and had the name wrong.
No.
But, you know, being number 17, he's the last to join a really crowded field. Didn't you have just a little bit of sympathy for him, other than saying, who is he?
Well, of course, because you don't think of who is he, because one, he was a fairly successful governor of Virginia. He was the Republican National Committee chairman for a brief time. He was actually, and this is embarrassing, but truth be told, in 2000, he was my predicted running mate for George W. Bush. I really thought it was going to be Jim Gilmore, given the fact that he had a lot of foreign policy experience. Nobody saw Dick Cheney, the guy who was leading the search for the running mate to pick himself. But Gilmore, you know, I mean, he has been out of office for a while. He ran for the Senate a few years ago against Mark Warner and got absolutely clobbered. But seriously, I mean, look at Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal's approval ratings in Louisiana, I mean, he won two big terms, and now his numbers are approaching well under sea level, so his numbers are really poor. So, I mean, I kind of feel badly for anyone who didn't get into the primetime debate, but for the most part, look at Lindsey Graham. I mean, he's a two-term senator. He's served in the House. He's one of the most influential hawks on foreign policy, on international policy. And here he is talking to an audience, you know, talking to six other candidates with an audience. Also, where about seven people were in the audience.
Yeah, and speaking of being number 17, are Republicans 18, 19, and 20 floating around out there somewhere? Or is everyone in who's going to be in at this point, do you think?
Oh, if we're talking about candidates who haven't announced yet, we could look on the Democratic side. There's a lot of talk about Joe Biden. I don't know about a lot of talk, but there is some conversation about will he or won't he. But I think there's only nine Republicans left in the country who have not announced for candidates, you know. No, everybody, all 17, that's going to be the Republican field, and it's the largest field in history. But it's worth pointing out that the Democrats in 1976 had 14 candidates. That was the one that Jimmy Carter eventually got the nomination. There were 14 candidates, and nobody seemed to say, oh my goodness, there are 14 Democratic candidates. But I guess the Republican field seems much bigger right now.
And I always have to ask the question, Ken, with this many candidates, again, is it possible that come convention time, there's no clear-cut winner and we roll in with maybe having to have a brokered convention? Or is Trump just going to roll over everybody?
I'm giggling at that because that is the political junkie fantasy. Every 4 years, well, you know, there's so many candidates, maybe we'll have a fight at the convention. You know, no convention has gone past the first ballot since the Democrats in 1952 when Adlai Stevenson won the nomination. So every convention since then for the presidency has always been one ballot. But, you know, it's a great fantasy. But the thing is, after a certain time, and I think it is mid-March, all those Republican primaries will be winner take all. So whoever has a momentum, whoever has, you know, a head of steam behind them will gallop onto the nomination. And once again, we will have the nomination decided well before we get to the convention in Cleveland.
Ken, was there anybody last night who did well enough that you think they're going to be able to move up into that first tier of GOP presidential candidates?
There were a lot of people who talked about Carly Fiorina doing really well, the Fox poll going on at the time. I think had her with like 84% leading the pack. She was pretty effective. Sometimes maybe she may be a little bit much, but pretty effective talking about Hillary Clinton. And that's basically what a Republican running mate is supposed to do, be the attack dog, you know, going after the Democratic nominee. We saw that with Richard Nixon in 1952, Spiro Agnew in 68, even Bob Dole in 1976. Their job was to be go on the attack and go in the assault while the head of the ticket was be, you know, away from the conflict, you know. So I think that Carly Fiorina did. I think she was very articulate, unlike me right now. But
it's
but
Friday.
I also thought it was interesting is that Lindsey Graham was basically making the argument: elect me president, and I'm going to send thousands of troops to the Mideast. I mean, when you think of presidential candidates in the past, Lyndon Johnson and Franklin Roosevelt always promising to stay out of war and not sending your troops overseas. And here's Lindsey Graham saying, elect me and we're going to have, you know, more tens of more thousands of troops in the Mideast.
Yeah. Did anybody really, really hurt themselves badly in that first debate, do you think?
No, I don't. I mean, I'm trying to think of I have very little memory of what many of the candidates like George Pataki, who had no chance to begin with. So, you know, and George Pataki, of course, is a pro-choice Republican, but everything he said during the debate talked about how much he's opposed to abortion, even though he's pro-choice, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I don't know. I mean, Lindsey Graham was very solemn, very unsmiling. He, you know, again, talked about, look, you know, we don't defeat them there, we're going to have to defeat them here, which is not an irrational argument, but it wasn't a really optimistic kind of conversation. The only one who seemed to really have a spark of life, as I said, was Fiorina.
Did Lindsey Graham seem like he was a little bit nervous? Did he sound nervous to you when he was doing this?
Well, he did seem off his game. Look, I kind of think that the reason Lindsey Graham got in the race was to be the counter foreign policy person to Rand Paul, because Rand Paul being somewhat of an isolationist, or at least regarding foreign incursions. And Lindsey Graham, of course, has been the biggest advocate of, you know, getting a U.S. involved in Syria and the Mideast and things like that. So I kind of think he got in the race so he could stand up to Rand Paul, have that debate with Rand Paul. But that certainly didn't happen in the two separate debates last night.
So, trivia question, who was the first major Republican candidate to drop out of the race 4 years ago? And John in Northside, what do you think the answer is, John?
Well, I believe it's our dear friend Donald Trump, yes?
No, John. Nice try, though. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Mark, I think my job is to explain the answer. You're not supposed to know the answer, Mark. See, the gimmick here is that you don't know the answer. I know the answer, and I explain why it's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ken.
Those are in the rules. You have to read the rules. But anyway, the reason it's not Donald Trump is he never announced as a candidate. He toyed with it. He toyed with it in 2000 and again in 2012, but never actually made the race.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't a bad answer in the first place. I mean, it could have been possible. I mean,
oh no, absolutely. Yeah, his name was bandied about. I mean, not only by Trump but by other Republicans as well, that he would make a great candidate, but he did not run.
Yeah, was there anything that when you were watching that 5 o'clock debate and then you switch over to the 9 o'clock debate, did you see anything in the 5 o'clock debate that carried over to that main debate at nine?
Well, except for the fact that Hillary Clinton, you know, I mean, everybody talked about how the candidates are going to be prepared to take on Donald Trump. As it turned out, it was the Fox moderators who really took on Donald Trump far more than the candidates. But the theme of let's not battle among ourselves, let's get our focus our ire on the Democrats and Hillary Clinton, that started, of course, in the 5 o'clock debate and continued into the later one.
Okay, let's see if Judy in Westchester knows the answer to the
trivia. Now, Mark, you know the rules, right?
Yeah, I will keep my lips sealed this time.
Okay,
sorry,
okay,
Ken. Don't
okay,
don't fire me, please.
No.
Okay,
no.
Let's see if Judy in Westchester.
I don't want to do to you what I did to Howard, okay? Just want to say.
Okay, let's see if Judy in Westchester knows the answer. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
So who do you think?
I think it was Tim Pawlenty.
Tim Pawlenty is the correct answer. But that was quick. I mean, we got that fast.
Yay.
Wait. Wait, my dog just started barking from that bell. I don't know what happened. And I don't even have a dog. That's what's so scary. Tim Pawlenty, basically, he kind of had weak debate performances. He failed, you know, he criticized Mitt Romney as part of his plan. His health care plan in Massachusetts was Obamacare. But when they asked him to criticize Romney during the debates, he didn't. He basically spent most of his time fighting with Michelle Bachmann, and that did not work out in his favor. And when he did poorly in the Iowa straw poll in Ames, he dropped out of the race shortly after.
Judy, congratulations. Stay on the line, and our producer will get your information so we can send you your prize. So way to go, Judy. Good job. You know, it was interesting. Well, let's go ahead and we'll take a quick break here. Then we'll come back to this next question. So more political talk with Ken Rudin coming up. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. And joining me this afternoon, political junkie Ken Rudin, as we talk about the GOP debates and other political news of the day. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's kind of interesting, Ken. It's just amazing how many of the candidates' camps are now putting out these press releases and emails saying, my candidate won, my candidate won. I guess that's just what we should expect, though.
Well, you know something, if you, I haven't been to many of these debates, but the ones I have been to, one of the most uncomfortable events is the spin room right afterwards, whereas the advocates and the campaign supporters of the candidates come out and explain why they won the debate. And I think one of the problems with this is I think the advice you should give to people is you should watch the debates. And then not listen to the spin immediately after. Give yourself a couple of hours or even overnight to comprehend what you just saw. Decide for yourself who did the best and who didn't, and who did poorly. But not listen to the spin, the stuff that follows, which is really obviously, I mean, for a certain point of view, it's just in favor of the candidates. But you should ignore that completely.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I heard somebody say that a lot of times the real news and the real pertinent things from these debates, it doesn't shake out until several days after the debate.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, it was interesting. There was a debate 4 years ago. It was the first. I mean, of course, this is not a primary debate, but it was Romney and Obama, and Neil Cohn and I took Talk of the Nation. I think we took him to St. Louis, and we had a live audience listen to the debate. And when we thought, and everybody kept saying, oh, the later spin was that Obama was really weak, that he was out of touch, that he seemed to be lost. And I thought he did a fine, if not a great, performance. But so it's kind of interesting how a certain narrative gets involved, a narrative gets said in the media, and then it gets expanded, and people latch on to it. But I kind of think that if you make your own decisions, then you can. I think that's the way to deal with these kind of debates, because we have eight more Republican debates, and we'll have six Democratic debates starting in October. And if you could listen to as less little spin as possible, I think you'd be better off.
You have an opinion on how the campaigns did using social media during the debates? Did anybody in particular stand out with social media?
Well, to be honest with you, I was doing social media nonstop. I wasn't looking at the other candidates because I was so busy being clever and cute and snarky and all that stuff. So I kind of spent the night doing that. So.
Okay, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Larry in Milford. Hi, Larry.
How are you?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm fine. I have my thoughts on this, but I'd like your thoughts on why race was not a topic last night. It is very important right now, and not one word about it.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
That's a very, very good question, because given the what we saw with some Democratic candidates, Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley, who seem to have an inability to talk about police brutality and the tagline "Black Lives Matter," I expect it to be a question about police activity and police and neighborhood relationship with the police. But given the fact that we've seen over and over again instances, regrettable instances of white policemen killing unarmed black, it's not a lot, but of course one is a lot, I guess you can say. But given the fact that it's part of the conversation, I would have expected that to come up. There was only one question about race, and it was given to Ben
Ben
Carson, the
Carson,
only.
yeah.
Yeah, the only black person on the stage, who basically said that, why can't we all love each other? And we're not black, we're not white, we're one American. That doesn't work given the headlines we've seen over the past couple of months. But I agree with Larry. I was surprised that a question like that did not come up.
One of the things about last night's debate, it was a little bit tough to follow things too, because they were only addressing like certain issues and questions to one or two candidates at a
Right.
time. So you really couldn't get an overall impression of how everybody felt about any one particular issue. And a lot of that was trying to get through 10 candidates in a couple of hours.
I think that's the part. I mean, you think of all, you have 2 hours and you can think of all these candidates dominating the debate. Donald Trump spoke for only 10 minutes and 31 seconds. I mean, you think of him like dominating the whole thing, but that's all it was. And when you have 10 candidates, you got to be as fair as possible. But, there are some candidates on the fringes, like Ben Carson, like I thought Marco Rubio, while a lot of people thought he did really well, I didn't see him getting that much involved. First of all, not ask that many questions, but also not leading anything. Scott Walker, who's supposed to be the front runner in Iowa, seemed to have a very diminished role in the debate. But I guess when everybody comes to see the car wreck, aka Donald Trump, that it's hard to focus on the other candidates.
So Trump had about 10.5 minutes of talking time.
That's it.
Okay,
that's it.
I think does this sound right? Ali Akbar put these numbers out that I'm seeing. Rand Paul, in contrast, only had 5 minutes and 10 seconds.
Right. I think second place was Bush with 8.5, 8:45. But I thought that, you know, what fascinated me that the opening scene of the debate: raise your hand if you pledge. Raise your hand if you have no intention. If you cannot guarantee that you'll back the Republican nominee or plan to possibly run for a third party candidate. And to his credit, Donald Trump raised his hand and said, look, I can't pledge that. I mean, he could have taken the easy way out and not raise his hand at all. But he raised his hand and said, I can't promise. But so, I mean, good for him. I don't know how smart politically it was. But
yeah, that was the honest answer. But yeah, doesn't he seem to go back and forth on this one? Because I've heard several different reports saying first he says, no, I'd never do that. Then he says yes. And then last night in the debate, he says, yeah, I can't guarantee I wouldn't do this.
Well, I think the actual answer, the thing that he's really stuck to, is that I won't rule it out. And of course, given the fact that we've seen so much criticism back and forth between Republican candidates and Trump, and of course Trump responds not only in kind but in kind times 10 whenever he's criticized, a lot of the Republican, and certainly the Republican establishment, will do whatever it can to deny Trump the nomination.
You know, and part of it too, I think, is he's leading in the polls right now. So why should he talk about, you know, his intention's got to be, I'm going to win this outright. You know, why should I even talk about running as a third party candidate?
Well, except if you buy the argument that the Republican establishment is out to get him, is out to defeat him, and of course, a lot of Trump supporters pointed to Fox News as part of the Republican establishment trying to do whatever it can to discredit Trump. A third-party candidacy would not be surprising to me at all. I mean, it's all about Donald Trump. It's never been about the Republican Party. And as we saw last night with all these questions from the moderators, you gave money to Hillary Clinton. You gave money to Nancy Pelosi. You supported single-payer payment like Obamacare for health insurance. So all you used to support, you were pro-choice on abortion. So even though these moderators will point out all his faults, all his contradictions, all his breaks from conservative orthodoxy, Trump just shrugs his shoulders and say, look, that's the kind of guy I am, and I changed my mind. And so far, the audience and his supporters stick with him.
Well, Chris Wallace had the tough question, too, about Trump's business background. And the fact that he had 4 corporate bankruptcies and had like 1,100 employees laid off. And is that something that Trump's going to have to deal with, is just all this criticism of his business background? Because it seems to be the thing he's touting. I'm a great businessman. I've created this vast amount of wealth. But then you hear, you know, well, wait a minute, you weren't perfect.
Well, no, that's true. But I thought his defense, I thought of his defense on a lot of things were pretty weak. And we could talk about his comments about women. But he said, look, I've had hundreds and hundreds of business deals. Yes, there were 4 where I had to rely on government intervention because of bankruptcy. But I've had hundreds and hundreds. Whereas remarkably to me, I think that one of the problems with Carly Fiorina's candidacy was her tenure at Hewlett Packard, where she basically came into a company where the stock was great, and she was basically thrown out of Hewlett Packard because, one, she fired thousands of people, and the company was, you know, going down the tubes, and yet nobody asked her that question in that early debate.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Ken Rudin. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. You know, Ken, after Trump's comments about Mexican immigrants and John McCain's status as a war hero, a lot of the experts thought Trump was finished. They were already writing him off. And, you know, to some extent, they're correct. These are mishaps that would, they potentially knock off other candidates, but yet these seem to be bouncing right off of him. And Howard.
Well, they're not even mishaps. I think he's deliberately trying to provoke the audience. He's trying to shake things up. He's trying to show that he's not part of any organization. I mean, he's free to speak whatever he wants. He's so rich, as he may have told you, that he's, you know, he's not confined.
Many a time.
He's not confined by any of that. So I don't know if it's even a mishap. I think he just likes to provoke people, likes to antagonize. And I think, you know, the audience, what was it, Howard
So these aren't
Beale?
Gaffes, these are intentional, okay.
I think they are. Remember Howard Beale in Network, the movie from several decades ago where he screamed, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I think there are a lot of, not only Republicans, but voters out there who are just so tired of both parties, who are just tired of things not getting done, that, you know, build a wall. I'm going to bomb ISIS. I mean, nothing seems to make sense, but so what? You know, I mean, keep going. You know, damn the facts, damn the torpedoes and the facts, full speed ahead.
Now, Howard and I have had this conversation about Donald Trump's staying power for, you know, several times now, and Howard thinks he's going to fade, and I'm not so sure. What's your
take?
Well,
I used to think that, too. I used to think that he might even, first of all, I was surprised he'd gotten the race. Then I was thinking, well, maybe he just wants to be in the debates and he'll be out by the fall. The next debate is next month in Simi Valley, California, run by CNN. And so I thought maybe he just wants to be in the first couple of debates, then he'll leave. But why should he? I mean, he's given up so much. He's given up, you know, The Apprentice. He's given up his contract with Macy's. He's given up his contract with ESPN and the PGA. And he basically says, what do I have to lose now? I mean, if he helps Hillary Clinton get elected, what does he care? I mean, you know, I mean, the Republican Party has done him no favors. So I kind of think that he's such a wild card. He makes the rules up as he goes along. I think the key is there's no reason or purpose for us to predict what's going to happen. I think we should just go along for the ride and see where it takes us.
Tim sent us an email, Ken. He wanted to know if you were surprised there were no questions on climate change, especially with the recent new EPA regulations by President Obama.
Well, it's like Larry's earlier question about race. I kind of think that these certainly are questions you'll see in a general election debate, but I think that why not ask a question about climate change if no other reason? I mean, the Fox moderators didn't seem to want to protect the Republicans from embarrassing answers, certainly. So why not ask a question about climate change and why not have the candidates once again talk about that this has nothing to do with man? This is just cyclical and it's about God and things like that, and which a lot of Republicans, I mean, the Republicans have been accused not only about a war on women, as Hillary Clinton will say over and over again, but a war on science. And I'm surprised it was not a question getting Republicans to talk about that. At least Jeb Bush, for all his faults, and he has a lot of faults, Jeb Bush has talked about that. Yes, this is climate change is real and should be paid attention to.
To me, when I was watching Jeb Bush, he I'm surprised he had 8.5 minutes of talking time last night, because he seemed quiet to me. He seemed lost in the shuffle. I'm sorry, Ken. When I saw him on camera too, the other thing I thought is he had this look on his face like things are slipping away from me. I don't know if that was just my perception or what, but he didn't look like he felt very confident up there.
Well, I watched him. That's a very good point, Mark, because I felt the same way. I watched him last Monday. There was a Republican forum in Manchester, New Hampshire, that was on C-SPAN, and myself and three other people in America were watching it, because Donald Trump wasn't there, so why should anybody watch it? But in the Manchester thing, and also last night in the beginning, he seemed unsure of himself. Look, yes, he has not debated in a long time. He has not run for office since 2002, which is a long time. But for someone who's ostensibly the Republican front runner, at least not in the polls, but in the eyes of the establishment, for somebody who's raising all this money because they think that he'll be the next president, he did seem very out of sorts. Now, I thought he did regain his footing later in the debate when he was talking about Common Core, which is so controversial among conservative Republicans, but I thought he gave a very adequate, if not a forceful defense of his position on education standards and things like that. But I agree with you. It was also interesting that no candidates took him on. I mean, there was a fight between Chris Christie and Rand Paul. Everybody was ganging up on Donald Trump. There were questions about other candidates, but for the most part, nobody engaged in Jeb Bush. The only one who's been attacking him lately is Hillary Clinton. And I'm surprised other Republicans didn't join in that fight.
You think Jeb Bush is still a force to be reckoned with, though, or has he been trumped?
Oh, God. I mean, when you have $143 million, he's raised more than any with his special PACs, his super PACs and all that. Nobody at this stage of the campaign has raised that much money ever. I guess it's one of those things that I keep expecting him to knock the socks off the opponents. I keep expecting him to really get the voters excited about him. But if you look at the polls the past month or two, if anything, his numbers are decreasing with support with his unfavorables. His unfavorables are rising among the more conservative element in the Republican Party. And I kind of thought this would be the time. Look, if this were October, November, approaching Iowa and New Hampshire, then I'd be really worried. But there's still some cause for concern that Bush is not doing a better job. But again, this is the first debate. We have more opportunities.
Did you see any of the 17 dropping out before the next debate?
I don't think so. I was wondering about the 7 who didn't make it. And maybe, you know, because if you're not considered among the elite, then your party, your campaign finance will dry up in a hurry. I'm not sure how much money those other candidates have to begin with. I mean, Rick Perry does have a reservoir of support, of financial support in Texas, but I don't think Lindsey Graham, George Pataki, Carly Fiorina, Bobby Jindal, those candidates have, Jim Gilmore, have much money going for them. But so I kind of think that there's nothing to lose by staying in the debate. But after the second one, perhaps you could see some candidates saying, maybe it's not worth it. But I think if there was I don't think anybody buys the fact that Donald Trump is for real, that he'll be the nominee. And as long as Jeb Bush is not, you know, running away with it or knocking the socks off anybody, or anybody is standing up as the leader, there's no reason for a candidate to drop out.
We'll continue our conversation with Ken Rudin. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Ken Rudin joins me this afternoon as we talk about the latest from the world of politics, including last night's GOP presidential debate. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Andy in Hamilton. Hi, Andy.
Hey, guys. Hey, I had a question for you about Donald Trump. I followed the debate last night on the third-party fact checker, and they said a lot of the things that Trump was saying were just patently untrue. And I was curious if you thought that a lot of his early success was based on the fact that he was just making statements that were not actually factually accurate.
Well, I think, you know, Andy, I think that alludes to the thing I said earlier, that it doesn't matter what he has to say. I mean, you know, he could talk about, well, I'm going to build a wall and Mexico will pay for it. Says who? Mexico is deliberately sending rapists and murderers across the border. Says who? I have a plan. I could bomb ISIS. I mean, you could bomb ISIS? ISIS is not a country. It's a spreading, you know, guerrilla movement. I mean, so many things he said. His supporters just say, you know, right on, Donald, you know, you tell him. But it doesn't make sense. I thought one of the most instructive things is early in the debate when Megyn Kelly brought up the fact that in the past he has called women fat pigs and dogs and slobs and animals and things like that. And for Donald Trump to one answer like, well, I was only referring to Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, I don't know how that could possibly be funny. And two, to say, I can't believe you're into this political correctness stuff. I mean, calling women fat pigs and dogs, and calling them out on that, and his response is, I don't believe in political correctness, my goodness. So that's why I think what Donald Trump has to say is not necessarily about reality, but as John Kasich pointed out, and I thought kind of interestingly that he was very, the way he almost defended Trump, he said, look, he's speaking for an unhappiness, for a dissatisfaction in this country that's real, and because he's not tethered to any kind of has no monetary worries, he's free to say what he wants, and that's the chord he's touching in this country. But again, I mean, you know, Ross Perot used to do things like that too, when he would say these crazy things, but ultimately the media called him out on it and his numbers went down. Every time the media calls out Donald Trump on something he says, his numbers go up. Now, I haven't seen any numbers today. I don't know if his standing in the polls have changed, but I don't suspect that anything will change.
Thank you for the call, Andy. 513-419-7100 if you would like to join our conversation. And and watching Governor Kasich last night, because you mentioned him, he seemed to get a really nice reception from that hometown crowd. He, you know, it was almost like a home court advantage for him that they were at in Cleveland.
Excuse me. I just started coughing for a second. You know, not only is that true, but I thought was very interesting is that he was asked a question about gay marriage and whether he would treat his daughter differently because with gay, if she were gay and things like that. For him to effectively defend somebody who's gay and the compassion he showed towards people who were gay, and to see a response like that from the audience, the large applause, the huge applause, it seemed very odd to see that at a Republican debate, because in the past, if you had any kind of sympathy for gay Americans, I could see them getting booed. And yet, maybe because it was home field advantage, maybe because it was done in a very compassionate way, but it was interesting that at this Republican debate, the audience really applauded compassion towards gay Americans.
Well, and Kasich seemed to be coming off as more of a moderate by indicating his acceptance of the Supreme Court's ruling. Were you surprised that he seems to be giving more general election answers in this debate than primary answers? And I'm wondering how that's going to affect him at the primary level. You think he irritated the conservative base?
You're absolutely correct. That's exactly what he's doing. He's doing basically what Jeb Bush is doing. Jeb Bush has said in the past, "I'd rather lose the primary, but win the general election." In other words, he's willing to not kowtow or pander to conservatives. But let's face it. The Republican Party is a conservative party. This is not a wing of the Republican Party. It is the Republican Party. So when you're, you know, say nice things about Common Core education standards, when you talk about pathway to citizenship, when you talk about let's accept the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage, well, that may sound very good for November. You know, maybe he'll be very good general election kind of argument, but if you're going into conservative hotbed states like Iowa and South Carolina and states like that, I don't know how that helps.
Overall, how do you think John Kasich did last night? You think he raised his stock?
I think he did. You know, it's interesting. When I watched him announce his candidacy, I guess it was at Ohio State, and I thought it was terrible. I thought it was dreadful. I thought it was, I mean, I could, you know, he could be folksy and our shucks type, but I thought it was just not inspiring at all. And yet, while he didn't seem much different in last night's debate, I thought he was very effective. I don't think he wasted a lot of words. I mean, obviously, even when the moderators tried to get him to take on Donald Trump, he basically explained Donald Trump's appeal without alienating Trump. I thought he did a good job. In many ways, I mean, I don't like the two-tier system, but I'm very glad that Kasich made the top 10, because in my thinking, I think that he has a good shot at the nomination. I think he can be well-financed. I think the lure of Ohio and the specter of having Ohio behind him, I don't know if it's a sure thing, but it certainly helps. I think Ohio is crucial. And I kind of think that he did well in the debate. I saw a lot of post-election articles, debate articles that said that they thought he won. I certainly think he did himself a lot of good.
You know, you were bringing this up earlier about the exchange between Rand Paul and Chris Christie, and I actually thought that was one of the better exchanges from the debate last night, when they were talking about NSA surveillance and the Bill of Rights, and you know, Paul takes his usual libertarian stance, and Christie, it comes off sounding like a hard-nosed federal prosecutor that he was. That was a great exchange, actually.
It was probably the only real exchange of policy that one is not only splitting the Republican Party, well, it's certainly splitting the American people, that age-old argument, do you want privacy or do you want security? And of course, Rand Paul, like his father Ron Paul, always believed that, that government surveillance is going too far. There was a Bill of Rights, there was a court of law that should handle it this way, as opposed to just having warrantless surveillance. And of course, Chris Christie comes from a state that is very, very close to what happened to 9/11, that so many people from New Jersey lost their lives on 9/11, and the fact that he was a former U.S. attorney and federal prosecutor, that he went after terrorists. That is a very good debate that's going on in the country, let alone the Republican Party, and we saw that last night.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation with Ken Rudin. And let's talk with Peter in Oxford. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I was sort of frightened last night in one exchange about these mindless people. Governor Perry, I think it was, said that Iran is the biggest supporter of terrorism. They support ISIS. He doesn't know that Iran is Shiite and does not support ISIS, which is Sunni. So what's he going to do? Nuke Iran and then say, whoops, sorry, wrong country. I meant to nuke Saudi Arabia? I mean, doesn't the media leap on that, the incompetence of some of these people?
Ken? There were some things said in that first debate that I was startled by the fact that the Fox moderators did not jump on. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's a tendency, not widespread, but it's out there, that you lump Iran and you lump ISIS together, which is so insane. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're right. Iran is Shiite. ISIS is the outgrowth of Saddam Hussein's Sunni regime, but even more extreme. But, you know, I mean, the question, if you listen to the questions in the first debate, so many of them were, well, how can you be a viable candidate when you're doing so poorly in the polls? There had to be about maybe 15 questions about standings in the polls, which I was rolling my eyes on and say, that's what you want to ask about? I agree with you. I heard that, too. And I was very surprised that he wasn't called on that.
The whole issue in the Middle East is so complicated. There are so many different factions and groups, and I don't think he's the first to, and I'm not saying this to defend him, but I don't think he's the first to stumble over the whole Shiite and Sunni confusion. I think that's
happened
quite
a few times.
I'm
not going to cut him slack with that, because first of all, there's something about Rick Perry that I kind of I find endearing. I mean, obviously, remember that November 2011 debate where he's in a cut, these three departments, and I'm going to cut commerce, I'm going to cut education, and then he couldn't think of the third one.
Remember number three. Yeah,
number three. It took him 15 minutes to remember that it was the energy department, but before that he said energy, he said oops, which is, I mean, now forever Rick Perry will be associated with debate gaffes. But to do whatever he did, he worked so hard to try to come back as a serious thinking person's candidate a year later or 4 years later, and to say something that Iran-ISIS alliance, it just said, oh my goodness, did you not learn anything in those 4 years?
513-419-7100 to join us. And then, you know, there was another exchange that I thought really, really had some good substance to us, and that was the one on Social Security that was between Chris Christie and Mike Huckabee, both agreeing that something needs to be done, but disagreeing on the approach. And Huckabee's advocating for what he calls a fair tax, I think it is, as a way to shore up Social Security. Isn't that a consumption tax that he's proposing?
Well, I think the real debate over Social Security really was about entitlements. And for better or worse, it seems like Chris Christie is more interested and more inclined to say, look, you know, God bless Social Security and God bless Medicare and all these things, but it's bleeding us dry and we have to make these major changes. Whereas Huckabee is saying, no, we don't have to do that. We could, you know, maybe we cut the, what do you say, something about cutting Congress cutting
their retirement plan.
Cutting their retirement plan. And
get rid of the IRS and institute a new taxation system.
And Chris Christie said, wait a second. Do you think cutting the members of Congress as Social Security benefits and retirement benefits is going to make a big difference? But Christie seemed to be the outlier on the Republican field about what to do about entitlements. For the most part, candidates are historically afraid to touch that, you know, the famous third rail of politics. But you know, one of these days, somebody's going to have the courage, and maybe Christie, with all his 3% in the polls, feels he has very little to lose.
Did it seem to you, though, that the three governors, Christie and Kasich and Scott Walker, who were in that main, they held up fairly well? I don't think any of them really hurt themselves all that much.
I don't know. Scott Walker didn't seem to impress me. I still think that Scott Walker doesn't show a lot of gravitas when it comes to foreign policy. I mean, that's always been the problem with a governor running for president. And of course, a lot has to do with the kind of questions they were asked. I thought the questions were tougher for Scott Walker. I don't know if he absolved himself as well, but I was less impressed with Scott Walker than I was with Christie and Kasich.
Let's talk with Sheila in Cincinnati. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
Thank you so much for taking my call. I feel as though the whole debate has been centered on Donald Trump. He has trumped everybody. So you don't hear much about Carson. You guys haven't spoken a whole lot about Huckabee. And what I want to know is, how has this guy become the focal point? He's manipulated everybody, including the panel. The opening question was geared for him to take over, and we began it on Trump. Later on, they asked questions of the various candidates, and they always were, what do you think about what Trump said? We're really being played here.
Well, I think the fact that he's leading in the polls, of course, you know, if you're the Gallup poll, and I you know, I'm with the Gallup poll, and I call you and said, look, I'm going to read off the names of 17 candidates. Who do you support? Well, I know Donald Trump. I'll mention his name. But I kind of think that Fox News was trying to do the opposite of what you say, that maybe Fox News realizes that much of Donald Trump is just completely antithetical to reality and the facts. So when they talked about, they want to remind voters that he could run against the Republican nominee and help Hillary Clinton. They wanted to remind voters that he called women fat pigs. So I kind of think that the media, especially Fox News last night, went out of its way to say, look, you know, Donald Trump is not a serious candidate. Look at all these things he said. And then with the ultimate objective of diminishing him in voters' eyes, and then maybe perhaps in subsequent events, the other candidates can take over.
Yeah, and Sheila mentioned Dr. Ben Carson. I liked his closing comment about the only candidate to remove half a brain.
Well, you know something that's funny? He was kind of like, I've never been really impressed with Ben Carson's grasp of foreign policy and things like that. But I thought his closing statement last night, you know, about, you know, the only doctor who's done that, but the only person, Kennedy, has done that. But when he said that, you know, one of the operations I've done is to remove half a brain from somebody, and which, you know, I think people in Washington beat me to it a long time ago. I thought it was, first of all, I was surprised to see him laugh out loud at his own joke, but it was a very funny joke, and it was a very good closing statement. But in the scheme of things, I don't know. I mean, I'm not to pick on the only African-American on the panel, but would I rather have had Carly Fiorina in the debate or Lindsey Graham to battle Rand Paul about foreign policy rather than Ben Carson, who spoke in a lot of generalities? I probably would have. And again, we talked about earlier when the caller asked about why there weren't questions about race. I think they could have asked Ben Carson a much more comprehensive and more serious question rather than, you know, shouldn't we all, is there really discrimination in this country when, of course, there is so much of it.
Now, on the Democrat side, Ken, you mentioned this earlier. They've announced 6 debates. The first one's October the 13th. Martin O'Malley actually criticized the debate schedule, saying it seems geared toward limiting debate and facilitating a coronation, not promoting a robust debate and primary process. Bernie Sanders says he's disappointed but not surprised. I think he'd like to see actually more than 6 debates. Do they have a point about the Democratic debate schedule?
Well, you know, I mean, we have 6 months to go before Iowa, New Hampshire, and that sounds like it's one a month. I mean, the Republicans had, I think, 17 last cycle, and now they only have 9. Look, I understand that they want to take on Hillary Clinton as much as they can. Hillary Clinton, in my view, was basically on her way to the Democratic nomination in 2007 and 2008 until a November of 2007 debate in Philadelphia where Tim Russert basically asked her about giving a driver's license to illegal immigrants, and she had no coherent answer to it. And then so I think a lot of the Martin O'Malley's and the Bernie Sanders of the world feel that the only way they're going to get a chance at knocking her off her pedestal is to point out inconsistencies or remind voters of her problems in these debates. And of course, you know, having only 6 opportunities to do it may not affect that many voters.
And Ken, this always happens whenever I talk to you. Time just flies so fast, we run out of it. So
No. What about Joe Biden? What about Planned Parenthood? There's so much to talk about.
There's so much to talk. We could go another hour.
Tell your audience to call me at home, and for the next hour, I'll talk to them individually.
Can
on
I
the
give
phone.
Out your home phone number?
Absolutely, yeah, but I'm staying at Howard's house.
Ken, good talking to you.
Thank you, Mark.
Political junkie Ken Rudin. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our program at WVXU.org. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier. Kevin Rawinski was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. With so many people vying for attention in the marketplace, it's a challenge to stand out and make a lasting impact. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll hear Todd Henry's strategy to use your authentic voice to create work that breaks through the clutter. We'll also look at this year's Bold Fusion event for young professionals. And in Focus on Technology, printing parts in space. It's easier than you might think. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.